This Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna. My spiritual master also told me before we speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, we should speak some glorification of the Bhagavatam. This literature is described by Shiva Sanatana Goswami. He says, Madeka Bhando Mat Sangin. This Srimad Bhagavatam is my only friend. Mat Eka Bhando. Not Sangin, my only association. A question arises in this regard. We have so much association, we may have so many friends. How can you say that Srimad Bhagavatam is my only friend? First of all, it's my only true friend. Because our friends in this material world, they come and they go. There's a saying in America, God help us, God save us from our friends and our family. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is my only friend. Another meaning is that friendship in this material world, or love in this material world, doesn't really exist. But that's a rather harsh thing to say to the Vaishnavas. It does exist. The 11th canto of the Bhagavatam describes Paraspuram Katanam Pavanam Bhagavadya Saha. We should learn how to associate with devotees by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. Madeka Bhando Matsangin. He's my only friend. Because if the devotees come together to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then this is the basis of real friendship. This is the basis of real love. Sanatana Goswami says, Madeka Bhando Matsangin Madguru Man Mahadana. The Srimad Bhagavatam is my guru. Mahadana, it's my great wealth. Manistaraka, it's my only deliverance. Madbhagya, it's my good fortune. And Madananda, Namostute. I offer my obeisances to this Bhagavatam to deliver the greatest bliss to me. The Srimad Bhagavatam itself speaks about the benefits of hearing the Bhagavatam. Yasyam vai shunyamanayam Krishne paramapurishe bhakti utpadyate pumsa shoka moha bayapa. Prabhupada translates this, simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, the feeling for loving devotional service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. In his Sa'artha Darshan commentary on this verse, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes it. This verse describes both a gona, or secondary, benefit of hearing the Bhagavatam, and a mukya, or primary benefit. The mukya, or primary benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is bhakti udpadyate from Shri. It gives bhakti to Srimad Bhagavatam. And the secondary benefit is three different parts. Shoka moha vayapaha. It dispels all fear, illusion, and lamentation just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam as the incarnation of Krishna, and it's described that by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna personally appears. We have in our library of Bhubaneswar a rare edition of the Bhagavatam, which was published in Barampur, and that edition of the Bhagavatam has a very interesting story to it. It's in Bengali, but it has about 6 or 8 different commentaries. In the Bhagavatam, it's considered a very first-class commentary. It has to do with one Vaishnav whose name was Radharaman Ghosh. And he was very famous as Bhagavat Bhushan, or the ornament of the Bhagavatam. He was a very great speaker in the Bhagavatam. He lived in the 1800s when this rare edition of the Bhagavatam was published. He was the editor for it. He was a resident of Dhaka in Bangladesh. And after he got out of school and lived for some years as a grihastha and worked, and finally he retired And when he retired, he decided to go to Vrindavan. He went to Vrindavan and was doing his bhajan and wandering about in the forest of Braj. And one day, as he was wandering around in the forest of Vrindavan, he came across a sadhu. And it was a rather strange scene. The sadhu was sitting by himself in the forest, and he was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to a tree. It was a tamal tree. Tamal tree is a blackish kind of tree, which they say only grows in Vrindavan. But there are two tamal trees in Jagannath Puri, on either side of the gates of the Tota Gopinath temple. That's another subject matter. So he saw this strange scene, and the sadhu was sitting there in front of the tree, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was crying. So Radharaman Ghosh said, this is a very interesting Bhagavatam class. So he sat down very quietly behind that speaker and just listened. And then when he saw that he was getting ready to finish, he quietly got up and left. And the next day, Radharaman Ghosh again went to the same place, and again he saw that same sadhu reciting the Bhagavatam. So every day, Radharaman Ghosh would go there and sit down quietly behind that speaker of the Bhagavatam. And that sadhu didn't know that he was there. One day, when Radharaman Ghosh came, he stepped on a branch or something, and it made a noise. And that sadhu turned and saw him, and motioned, come, sit down here next to me. He said, you'll be the second listener of the Bhagavatam. The first listener is Krishna. And Radharaman Ghosh said, yes, yes. There are many eccentric sadhus. Vrindavan, huh? So every day he was reciting the Bhagavatam, and he was going through all the different cantos until finally he finished the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. When he finished the katha, suddenly an extraordinary thing happened. That tree that he was speaking in front of burst open. And inside the tree, Radharaman Ghosh saw a tremendous effulgence. And there, standing in the middle of that tree with an enchanting smile on his face and a flute to his lips, was Krishna. And he was looking at Radharaman Ghosh. And Radharaman Ghosh fell unconscious to the ground. And when he finally revived, came to his external consciousness, he found that he was lying with his head on the lap of that sadhu. Radharaman Ghosh got up and began crying. And he fell at the feet of that sadhu. And that sadhu then began to rub him on the head very affectionately and told him, Radharaman, now you've been blessed with the darshan of my Radharaman. He said, I have an instruction for you. Every day you should recite Srimad Bhagavatam for Krishna, because Krishna gets so much pleasure when he hears Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said it's not necessary to perform some prana pratista. We do some prana pratista. We say Shri Krishna Yahavaha Yahavaha Shri Krishna Yahatis. There's some mantras that you use to call the deity to that place. But for this deity, it's not necessary. To call Krishna to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, you just recite the Bhagavatam, and Krishna loves the Srimad Bhagavatam so much that he'll come running to that place where the Bhagavatam is being recited. He said that Krishna, he resides in the hearts of those persons who recite and who listen to the Bhagavatam. So Radharaman Ghosh's talk from the Bhagavatam was so enchanting and so attractive that many, many people came to hear his classes. And he later received the title Bhagavat Bhushan. And it was due to his efforts, his editing, and the financial aid of this Maharaj Virchandra Manik that this Barampur edition of the Bhagavatam was published, a very significant edition of the Bhagavatam. So this is a nice story. The same point is made in the Bhagavat Mahatmya of the Skanda Purana, where it said there that when you have class in the Bhagavatam, when you recite the Bhagavatam, you should understand you're not alone. Srimad Bhagavatam Shastram Yatra Bhagavatar Yada Kirtiteshu Yate Chapi Shri Krishna's Tatra Nishtitam. Wherever and whenever devotees come together and they recite and listen to the Bhagavatam, you should know for certain that Krishna is personally present. How does that work? The next verse describes Srimad Bhagavatam Yatra Shlokam Shlokardam Evacha Tatrapi Bhagavan Krishna Bhavavibhir Virajate. I said that if you just recite Shlokam, one verse, a Shlokardam, even half a verse, Krishna comes and he's not alone. Bhavavibhir Virajate. He comes with the gopis. There's an interesting story in this regard. When Srila Prabhupada came in 1972, in August, to Soho Street in London, Padmalochan Prabhu and some other devotees had made a Vyasasana for Srila Prabhupada to sit on. And so Prabhupada came, and he sat on that Vyasasana, he gave his class. And then later on, Prabhupada went to his room. And then some devotee came downstairs and he told Padmalochan, Prabhu, Prabhupada wants to talk to you. So Padmalochan went upstairs and Prabhupada told him, he said, nice Vyasasana. I want you to make two more like it, but very small. He said, because every day Lord Brahma and Narad Muni, they're coming here to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam class. And you make some Vyasasana for them. So they did like that. So we don't know the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, such a very, very special literature. And who's coming to hear this Bhagavatam? This Bhagavatam is the life and soul of all the devotees. Sanatana Goswami, in his prayers for the Bhagavatam, he describes that Sarva Shastradi Piyusa, Sarva Vedaika Satphala, that this Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the nectar churned from the ocean of all the Vedic literatures. It's Sarva Bhagavata Prana. It's the life of the devotees. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives us life. Without the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have no life. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. So now we'll come to the verse. We're reading from Gantarashi Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 6, The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev, text number 4. Do you have it? Nityam? Yeah. Please repeat. Nityam dadati kamasya. Nityam dadati kamasya.
Nityam dadati kamasya.
Chidram dam anu ye raya
Yogina kritta maitrasya
Yogina kritta maitrasya Satyo jayeva pumshali
Satyojaiva
pumshali
Nityam
dadati kamasya
Chidram
dam anuye raya
Yogina kritta maitrasya
Patyojaiva pumshali
Nityam dadati kamasya
Nityam dadati kamasya
Nidram tam anuye raya
Nidram tam anuye raya
Yogina krita matrasya
Yogina krita maitrasya
Patyojaye vapum chari
Patyojaye vapum chari
Any Matajis?
Nityam
dadati kamasya
Nityam
dadati kamasya
Nityam
dadati kamasya Nityam Nityam Jarati Kamasya Chidram Tamam Yehaya Yogina Kita Maitrasya Patyodhyayi Vakumchari Nityam Jarati Kamasya Chidram Tamam Yehaya Yogina Kita Maitrasya Pajyotayi Vakum Shri Nityam
Nityam
always.
Always
the Dati
gifts
Kamasya of lust Chidram facility Tam
that
lust Anu following
Ye
those Araya enemies
Yoginaha
of the yogis
or
persons trying to advance in spiritual life Krita Maitrasya having put faith in the mind Pachyuhu of the husband Jaya Eva, like the wife, Pumshali, who is unchaste or easily carried away by other men. Translation by the Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada. An unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours, and it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Pumshali refers to a woman was easily carried away by men. Such a woman is never to be trusted. Unfortunately, in the present age, women are never controlled. According to the directions of the Shastras, women are never to be given freedom. When a child, a woman must be strictly controlled by her father. When she is young, she must be strictly controlled by her husband. And when she is old, she must be controlled by her elderly sons. If she is given independence and allowed to mingle unrestrictedly with men, she will be spoiled. A spoiled woman, being manipulated by paramours, might even kill her husband. This example is given here because a yogi, desiring to get free from material conditions, must always keep his mind under control. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning our first business should be to beat the mind with shoes 100 times and before going to bed to beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time. And an uncontrolled mind, followed by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into the material condition. One should be very careful of the mind, just as a husband should be careful of an unchaste wife. Gurave Gurachandraya Radhikayai Tadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. The Srimad Bhagavatam is our dear friend, and it's giving us instructions, as the Bhagavatam itself describes, in one of the Chatushloki verses which we mentioned last night. Anvaya vyatirekavya yet shat sarvata sarvada, directly and indirectly. So in this verse, some indirect instructions are given. The comparison is being made here of the mind to an unchaste wife, and how the uncontrolled mind is like an unchaste wife, and how an unchaste wife is very, very dangerous. And Srila Prabhupada says many things here in the purport, many strong things about the nature of women. We could try to avoid these subjects. It's a difficult subject matter sometimes to speak on because there's some controversy about it and some strong feelings on different sides by devotees. But if we do that, it's not fair. Rather, we should speak directly about this thing, and we should ask the question, how do we understand this? And what relevance does it have for us? In the Vedic literatures, there are many different descriptions about the glories of chaste wives and the importance of that. We should understand the relevance of this subject matter in Vedic culture and in our own lives as devotees. The Vedic literature describes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And there are different literatures describing these different subject matters. There are dharma shastras, there are artha shastras, there are kama shastras, like Kama Sutra. Kama Sutra, this incidentally, which is written by Vatsyayana Muni, is a literature which is meant to help relations between men and women. And it's not, that book, it's a funny thing, if you go into any bookstore, especially in India, that's the most popular book in all of India. But people misunderstand that book. The author, at the end of the book, he describes that, actually, I'm a brahmachari. And the reason I wrote this book is to discourage people from engaging in uncontrolled sex life. So that Kama Shastra also has a purpose. All these shastras have a purpose to uplift someone. But they have a relative position. Greater than the Kama Shastras are the Artha Shastras, which describe how to run a society, how to get wealth, how a village should be run, and different rules for people. But greater than those Artha Shastras are the Dharma Shastras. And if there's some conflict between them, then we follow the Dharma Shastras. And those Dharma Shastras describe some, what we would consider to be indirect worship of Lord Vishnu. Their literatures, like Manu Samhita, and Vishnu Smriti, different literatures which describe the process of Vanashram Dharma, and how that Vanashram is meant to worship the Lord. It's described in the Vishnu Purana that this Vanashram system is meant for the pleasure of the Lord. Vanashrama charavata purushena paratuman Vishnu aradyate panta nanyat tatto shakarnam. It said there that nanyat tatto shakarnam. There's no other way to please Vishnu in this. But higher than those Dharma Shastras are the Moksha Shastras, such as the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. And all of those literatures, the Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha Shastras, they're all eclipsed by the Bhakti Shastras. Just as we say that these four things, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, are Kaitava Chatushtoy, in the language of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He says they are four types of cheating religion in comparison with Panchama Purushartha, the fifth or highest goal, which is bhakti. So these, there are three different sadhaks, three different types of persons according to Baladeva Vibhushan and his commentaries, Govinda Bhasha, on Vedanta Sutra is the Swanishita Sadhak, the Paranishita Sadhak, and the Nirapeksha Sadhak. And these are three persons who have three different attitudes towards Vanashram. The Swanishita Sadhak, he feels that I have to act according to this, and if I don't follow all the rules and regulations of Vanashram, I'll go to hell. Indeed, Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he says in Chaitanya Sikshamrita that as long as a devotee has material desires, he must follow the rules of Vanashram. But greater than that, Swanishita Sadhak is a Paranishita Sadhak. And that Sadhak, he follows Vanashram because he sees that this may help me. It'll help me in my spiritual life. But he understands that it's not actually required. The real thing is bhakti. Then there's the Nirapeksha Sadhak, and we're reading in this section of the Bhagavatam about Lord Rishabhdev. And Lord Rishabhdev, he gives so many instructions to his sons about Vanashram, like this verse today, but in his own behavior, he rejected Vanashram. And he acted as an avidut, or someone beyond the rules and regulations of Vanashram. And he was passing stool himself, and he was sometimes eating, sometimes not eating, sometimes taking bath, sometimes not taking bath. He wasn't following the rules and regulations of Vanashram Dharma. So a Nirapeksha Sadhak may follow that, he may not follow that. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's described that anyabhivasita shunyam jnana karmadi anabritam, that we should reject anyabhilash. In our bhakti, in our endeavor for bhakti, anyabhilash, or material desires, things which take us away from bhakti, they should be zero, anyabhilash. But then the verse goes on to say jnana karma adi anabritam. When it speaks about jnana, karma, and adi, and adi in his commentary on this verse, Srila Jiva Goswami, he says that adi also means vanashram. And it means tapasya, austerities, etc. Adi literally means austerity, etc. Jnana, karma, adi, anabhitam. It says that these things should not cover bhakti. And in his Durga Sangamani Tika, which literally means the way to reconcile difficult understandings, Jiva Goswami, he raises an interesting question. Why does it say anabritam, not covered? Why not shunyatam? There should be no jnana, no karma. We want pure bhakti. What is the necessity of jnana, karma, and vanashram? And Jiva Goswami, he says that it says not covered because some jnana, some karma, some vanashram can be beneficial for bhakti. For example, when he speaks about jnana, he says that there are different types of jnana. Tatparartha jnana, Tvamparartha jnana, and Jiva Brahma Aikya jnana. Knowledge about myself as a spirit soul, that's beneficial for bhakti. You may cultivate it. On the other hand, it's not required. If you simply engage in Nam Sankirtan, that understanding will automatically arise. You don't have to cultivate the empirical knowledge that I'm a spirit soul, I'm not this body. But it can be helpful for us, because it can help us to avoid some problems in life. Tvamparartha jnana, we should understand ourselves, we should understand the nature of the Lord. That's another type of jnana. And that also is beneficial. But he says, Jiva Brahma Aikya Jnana, knowledge of the oneness of the Jiva and the Supreme Lord, that's detrimental for bhakti. So, Jnana Karma Adi Anahavitam, these things shouldn't cover bhakti. And Jiva Goswami says they may cover bhakti in one of two ways. In this particular case, when we're speaking about Vanashram, it may cover bhakti in that someone may think that it's the goal. And we become bewildered and think that to live a life according to Vanashram, that's the goal. But it's not the goal. The goal is bhakti. And the Srimad Bhagavatam in Vedic literatures again and again describe that what is the value of someone who cultivates vanashram but they don't get bhakti. Dana sanushtita punsa vishvakshina katashriya napodiyat yadivatim shama eva hikevalam. If someone doesn't develop some rati, some attraction for the Lord, then their vanashram is shama eva hikevalam. It's just a waste of time. And there's no value to it. So if someone thinks that vanashram is the goal, it's a misunderstanding. And it'll cover bhakti. So it shouldn't cover bhakti. The second way that this understanding, this jnana karma adi, including vanashram, may cover bhakti, is that someone may have a misunderstanding that I have to do it. And if I don't do it, then I can't get bhakti. Bhakti is swarat. Bhakti is independent. It's not dependent upon anything. The Bhagavatam describes bhaktya sanjayataha bhaktyaha. That bhakti comes from bhakti. Life comes from life. Bhakti stu bhagavad bhaktya sangena parijayate. The Brihannaradiya Purana states that bhakti comes from the bhakta. He's Krishna Kripa Srimurti. He's the embodiment of Krishna's mercy. And bhakti comes from him. Bhakti comes from the sadhu. So then what is the necessity of vanashram dharma? Jiva Goswami says that we may accept these things if they're favorable for bhakti. And therefore Srila Prabhupada encouraged devotees to understand it. And he spoke sometimes about things such as in this purport about the nature of different types of women. But it becomes confusing to us sometimes because Srila Prabhupada in his behavior seemed to act sometimes in a way that was very different from what he writes in his books or what he sometimes spoke. For example, about homosexuals, Prabhupada speaks very, very strongly. And he says things which are found in the Vedic literatures. The Bhagavatam says that the homosexuals were created from the anus of Lord Brahma, and it's considered to be very much an emotive ignorance. And Prabhupada didn't compromise. He spoke very strongly about that. But at the same time, and 26th Second Avenue, I don't know, maybe half of the male devotees had that particular nature. And Prabhupada knew it. And Prabhupada didn't reject them. Prabhupada didn't condemn them. Prabhupada encouraged them. And as we were mentioning, we gave class on a very similar verse yesterday morning in Paris. I don't know why Krishna is sending us this thing, but somehow he is. As we mentioned yesterday morning in Paris that there was one lady, I think her name was Bhaktin Jennifer, as I recall. And Prabhupada wrote her a letter, I would say her quotation marks, and Prabhupada said, anyway, you just have to decide whether you want to be a man or a woman. I think she, by her birth, was a man, but she was adopting the name Jennifer and living in the ladies' ashram. And Prabhupada said, you just decide which one you want to be and go ahead in that way. Prabhupada didn't condemn them because he saw that bhakti is the most important thing and Krishna Nam is the most important thing. And that will solve all of our problems. Mantratas tantratas chidjam desha kalaha vastutaha sarvam kroti nishchidjam anasankirtanam tava. The eighth canto of the Bhagavatam states a very important verse which is quoted by Jiva Goswami and Sundarva. Sanatana Goswami quotes it in his 11th Vilas of Hari Bhakti Vilas, which describes about the glories of the holy name, that there may be some chidra, some fault, mantratas tantratas chidra, there may be some fault in your vanashram dharma, in your behavior. You may not be a perfect person. You may not be able to act properly. The sarvam karoti nishchidram, all that chidra, all those faults go away anusamkirtanam tava, with the chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna. I remember in America when I was growing up, there was kind of intellectual artistic group. They had a record album. And the record album was called, I think, We're All Bozos on This Bus. So this is the nature of this material world. We're all bozos. Bozo means a clown or some person who can't behave properly. We're all bozos on this bus. We're on the bus trying to go back to Vrindavan, our original abode, but we're all bozos. We're all improper creatures. We all have some kind of faults in us. And if we try to become perfect persons according to Vanashram, it'll take so many, many lifetimes to do that. That's not our process. Rather, we take shelter of the holy name. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada spoke about Vedic culture. And he spoke about Vanashram, and he said many things which by our Western understanding are very, very difficult to understand. And even some people take offense with. The way, especially the way Srila Prabhupada speaks about women, and the way he speaks in this verse. Prabhupada didn't compromise. This is what the Vedic literature say. This is the ideal culture. That women, they should be protected. We can't understand that. Here in France, they become upset if a lady covers her head. If she wears a burqa, you're not allowed to do that. It's a big controversial thing. But if a woman walks down the street in a bikini, there's no problem with that. So there's a particular type of culture. And in our preaching and our spreading of Krishna consciousness, it's not that we can afford to ignore the culture that we live in. The culture which also pervades our genes and which very much affects us. One example for this is Thakur Bhaktivinoda's article, The Marriage System of West Bengal. In that article, Srila Prabhupada speaks about, Bhaktivinoda speaks about the marriage system there in West Bengal, and he makes a note that there are different marriage systems in different places. Sometimes we want to follow all the rules and regulations of Shastra and our marriage ceremonies, and we want to do all the mudras and puja things exactly correct, but correct according to what? According to the system they have in West Bengal, according to the system they have in UP, according to the system they have in Orissa, according to the system they have in Gujarat, according to the system they have in South India. It's different in different places. One of the purposes of Vaishnavas following social etiquette is because this is where we're born. Do you know a very controversial, difficult thing to understand? I'll mention to you. Both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jiva Goswami say that persons who are born as Yavana Malechas should not do Vedic yajñas. Jiva Goswami says that in his commentary in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhaktivinoda says a similar thing in Jiva Dharma. He says that although someone who may come from a Yavana Malecha family, he can be elevated through the process of chanting the holy names, he says he should not marry a Brahmani girl or a girl from a Brahmin caste. How do we understand this? We should understand that they're writing for a particular time and place. The acharyas give, there's two considerations, tatkalika and sarvakalika. Tatkalika means according to time, place, and circumstance, they'll speak a certain thing. And they spoke like that because, for example, in Orissa, if a Yavana Malecha boy marries a girl from a Brahmin family, they can't live in Orissa anymore. At least in, not in the village, maybe in Bhubaneswar or some big city. But they can't live in a small village. People won't tolerate that. They may beat them. They may threaten them with bodily harm because they have such strict social codes. So Bhaktivinoda and Jiva Goswami is saying, don't disturb that. And if you're living in that kind of situation, don't disturb that thing because it'll disturb your bhakti. So, in other words, there may be different considerations according to time, place, and circumstance, according to where we're at. And there's another consideration in the West, to speak very frankly and boldly. In our movement, in the beginning days, we tried to imitate Vedic culture. And I know one girl, she was, I think she was 15 or 16 years old, and they married her. She's a Gurukuli girl, and they married her for like a 35-year-old Prabhupada disciple. And it didn't work. And in fact, we've never heard of any of those marriages working. Those kind of arranged marriages like that. It doesn't mean that those marriages are bad, but we have to face the fact that we come from a different type of culture. In Orissa, for example, if we mentioned this last night, I think, if a sannyasi comes to a village and he runs away with someone's wife, and then later on that sannyasi comes back to the same village, they won't accept him. They'll beat him. They'll drive him out of that place. But in our society, it's not like that. We have a, because our society is not, we don't all think the same. we have a very, very broad society, so many different people from so many different cultures and traditions. And you can say that the ideal society is like this. It is like this. But it's not that our society is necessarily going to be like that. We can't imitate. You can't force someone. You can't dictate a society. You can't say, now everyone is going to think like this. Everyone should behave like this. It doesn't work that way. We have a particular nature. And Srila Prabhupada, he wanted Vanashram. But we should understand this Vanashram, it means Vana and Ashram, and it means a society which is like-minded. And we're not like-minded. That's just the unpalatable fact of the matter. We're not like-minded. And if some sannyasi runs away with someone's wife and he comes back, some people will welcome him to his home. Some temples may invite him to give class. And some people will spit on him. And maybe some other people might want to beat him. And can we say one is right and one is wrong? They all have their particular motivations. Ultimately, we have to understand as devotees that society is a secondary principle. It's gona. What's mukya is bhakti. And within bhakti, we have to act as individuals. And we have the society because it helps us. It helps us in our bhakti because bhakti stu bhagavad bhakti sangena parijayate. Bhakti comes from the devotees. And that doesn't just mean the nitya-siddha bhaktas who come to this world, but it also means other devotees because Srila Prabhupada, in one lecture in Los Angeles in 1970, he spoke about the importance of loving devotees. He said there, in the second platform, we should not only love God, but we should make friendship with devotees who are loving God. That is society. Our society is devotees. We should not only practice to love God, but we should make friendship and love the devotees also. It's very important. At the same time, in I think at least two places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes to Arjuna, he says in chapter 6, text 10, Rahasi Stitta Ekaki. A transcendentalist should live alone in a secluded place. Don't live with other people, live alone. And he says the same thing in the 13th chapter, text 11. Vivikta Desha Sevidam Arakta Jana Samsadi. This is two of the symptoms of knowledge. One should aspire to live in a solitary place and be detached from the general mass of people. So how do we understand this in context of what Prabhupada is saying about society? Should we just cut these points away from the Bhagavad Gita? Oh, it is not relevant for us. We'll cut it out. No, we have to understand. These things may seem contradictory, but they're not. We should live within society, but we should live alone in a mass of society. Meaning we have to have two things. And we like sometimes to give an example of Gaura Lila in Jagannath Puri. In Jagannath Puri, there are two places, two primary places of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. The Jagannath Mandir and the Gambira. In the Jagannath Mandir, according to Lochan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Mangal, Mahaprabhu was going there three times a day for darshan of Jagannath. That's where he was spending most of his time. And in that place, he gave a public face. But in the Gambira, there's another side of him. In that place, he was alone with Srup Damodar and Roy Ramananda, Govindadas, and sometimes Raghunath Das Goswami. And in that place, he was relishing something very different, something very private, something very high. So Gaudiya Vaishnavas need to have both these things. We have a public face, we support religion, and we're part of the Jagannath Mandir. But we also have a private face, a private side. We have to have that. Otherwise, we'll go mad. We have to have the Gambira side, where we do some bhajan, maybe we chant our japa alone in our room, and we may cry. It's not appropriate to cry in public, but we may cry in a private room. We may, with one or two antaranga bhaktas, intimate friends, we may read Prabhupada's Krishna book, or Prabhupada's commentaries in the 10th canto, or some other Gaudiya literatures like Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and speak in an intimate way. But we don't speak about this in public. for the general people, we have another face. We should have both sides, and we should understand this is the nature of Vedic culture. And Srila Prabhupada, he's not compromising, he's speaking about a very high culture, a very high class culture. And we should respect that culture. We should try to go in the direction of that culture. In many places in Vedic literature, this chastity of women is glorified. I can read a few things to you. In the Vairagya Martanda, it's described, Kutya Stri Tivida Jatir Brahmanamita Pura Uttama Pratama Sucha Madhyamacha Adama Braja. Previously, Lord Brahma, he divided women into three different categories. Uttam, Madhyam, and Adam. High class, middle class, and low class. This is Vedic culture. We should understand this thing. But we shouldn't try to demand that everyone try to come to this point. We shouldn't hate someone if they can't come to this point. If we do that, I think the temple may become empty. There won't be anybody here. Because we're all bozos on this bus. And this is what we have. We have this society. We have this association. We have to live with each other. But two things should be there. We should be very broad-minded and very accommodating and forgiving. If we can't forgive others, then how will we be forgiven ourselves? If we want to go and count the sins of everyone else, Papa Gunanam, this phrase is used in the Narada Purana. Papa Gunanam means someone who counts the sins of everybody else. Someone who's counting the sins and faults of someone, he's working for somebody else. He's working for someone called Chitragupta. And Chitragupta is that person. He's a scribe in the court of Yamaraj. And in that court, Yamaraj is the supreme judge. But we work in another court. And the poet Krishnadas, he's described in one song. My Nityananda. Why is he my Nityananda? Because he's Adosha Darshi. He doesn't see fault. And because I have so many faults. So I want to work in that court, not the court of Yamaraj, where he's the supreme judge. I want to work in the court of Lord Nityananda. And if I'm going to work there, I also have to be Adosha Darshi. And therefore he sings. Lord Nityananda is Adosha Darshi. He says, but I never worshipped him. What do you mean I never worshipped him? I never worshipped him because I'm Sarva Dosha Darshi. I'm finding everyone's fault. I have to be, Prabhupada writes in Madhyalila chapter 8, on purport, he says, the qualification of a Vaishnava is that he's Adosha Darshi. But the smartest, there are persons in India who are very strictly trying to follow this vanashram system. And when they see anyone deviating in any small way, they become very upset. And they criticize that. It would be a very ironic thing if we try to become like smartest, coming from our yavana malecha backgrounds. We have to practice forgiveness, both with ourselves and with others, and encourage everyone to chant the holy name. But these considerations are there in Vedic culture. We can read a little something about this, three different types of women. It's an important thing. We should respect and we can worship this culture. Uttama pati bhaktasa kinchit dhana samandita panante pi nukurute tamjaram ayasa karam. The Uttam woman, she's minutely religious and she's very devoted to her husband. Even at the cost of her life, she won't accept a paramour, a lover, and the defamation that it would bring. And then it describes a middle class wife. Guru na rakshita yatnad jaram cha na bhajed bhayat sakritjama madhyamacha kat yatta kinshit patimbajat. Any woman who, due to being very carefully protected by her husband and father and others, and out of fear doesn't accept a boyfriend other than, you know, someone other than her husband, and respects her husband out of fear, that's a middle class woman. Adama parama dushta atyante sadvam sajatata adharma shila dushila durmuka kalahandita. A low class woman has bad character, is irreligious, hard natured, hard speaking, and quarrelsome. She's the most low class. Similarly, in the Mahabharata, Sahadev describes three different types of wives. There's a sankani, which means very bad. She's very stubborn, and she fights over the slightest thing. She has harsh glances that she uses, and she speaks harshly to hurt other people. She quarrels with her relatives. In a group of ladies, she speaks ill of her husband. She takes to religion for her own upliftment, and she worships sannyasis and brahmacharis, but she neglects her own husband and his service. She thinks that her husband is only for fulfillment of material needs and can't recognize her husband as her spiritual benefactor. Those are some kind of bad wives. A summer wife, a good wife, is afraid of her husband in a mood of awe and reverence. She keeps to herself any problems that may come in relation to her husband and her relatives. She doesn't speak about it in public. She's always tolerant and she doesn't complain. She performs religious worship in the home. She has a cheerful, happy, jolly mood, and she speaks pleasingly to all. And a sati, or excellent wife, has a husband and always stays by his side. And this is culture we can't understand. It says that when she wakes up in the morning, she offers obeisances to her husband and touches his feet before she looks at his face. If her husband is 1% unhappy, then she feels 10% unhappy. If her husband is unhappy, she'll try to uplift his mood. She's always cheerful, pleasing, and humble. She cooks nicely. She makes bathing preparations for her husband. She arranges to dress her husband very nicely. Before taking rest, she gives her husband, she massages his feet. I'm sure Rukmini does all these things for you, isn't it, Arjun Prabhu? She gives full support for all of his goals. She's kind-hearted. If they're in a poverty-stricken condition, she'll stay with her husband and won't complain. Her husband's everything for her. She's her husband's shadow, and she stays hidden away from sannyasis. Many descriptions are there of this kind of thing. This is very high class, and we should respect this. We can try to go in this direction. It'll help us. But at the same time, we have a different culture that we're in. And it's very hard for us to understand this descriptions of Vedic women. And even people, very often, they become offended by it. We should understand why they become offended by it. I've noted two different cultures where both worship women. We were in Paris the last couple of days. And I noticed they worship women in Paris. Everywhere you go, there are deities of women. On the television and all the commercials and all the posters and pictures. And they worship women who are, excuse me, I don't know what you say in French, but in English we would say, who are hot babes. Any woman who's like that, she's worshipped. And they become goddesses. And I think probably in this culture, maybe from the age of 12 or 14, when they become little beautiful, then all the boys are following them around. Sometimes in India we see a female dog is in heat and a group of male dogs following behind it. So in our Western culture, not just in France, but all over the West, it's like that. When that girl's 13, 14, 15 years old, all the boys are following behind her. Like those dogs. And they worship her. And the girls in this culture, there's a certain value. And they want to become demigoddesses, hot babes, because if I become a goddess like that, everyone worships me. And this is what the culture, the society, the direction it goes in. Everyone appreciates this. Everyone wants this. All the women are reading Vogue magazine and seeing the latest fashions and when a, it's described that when a man sees a couple coming, the first thing that he looks at is the woman, not the man. He looks at the woman to see how beautiful she is or not. And when a woman sees a couple coming, the first person she looks at is also the woman. She looks to see how is she dressed and what is she wearing and like that. This is a particular type of culture. But this culture breeds anxiety like anything. There's no peace of mind. Because for the ladies, they get some happiness and pleasure, and no doubt it must be very intoxicating and fun to be a goddess. I can imagine. It would be a very nice thing. But there's always competition, because there's other goddesses. And there's a problem with this culture. It's a garbage culture. We were saying yesterday in the car that every 8 years we get a new car, every 4 years we get a new computer, we throw our old computer away, we get a new one. Every 2 or 3 years we throw away our old mobile phone and we get a new one. And every 7 years or so on the average, man gets rid of his old wife because she's become a little big. And he gets a new, more slender model, younger model. It goes on like that. It's a garbage culture. We don't respect people. And the women are full of anxiety all the time. And their goddess position, even who's it, Sophia Loren, now I think she was on the cover of some magazine recently at the age of, what is she now, 50-something? It's a very rare thing for a woman to be on a cover of a magazine when she's 50 years old. I don't think she's on the cover of any magazines when she's 80 or 90. Because this goddess position is a very short-lived thing. And you're always worried that there may be some other better, more beautiful goddess. So Vedic culture is also a culture which worships women. But we have a hard time understanding how that's done. It's a culture that worships women as mothers. It has a very different value system. And women also, there's a verse in the, Krishna says to the gopis, Sumadhyama. He addresses them in this way, Sumadhyama, O slender-waisted gopis. Vedic culture also appreciates physical beauty of women. But the primary beauty of women in Vedic culture is their quality of being a mother. And this is described in a number of different places. We made an article some years ago in our Bindu magazine. We collected different statements from Vedic literature. The Brahma Vaivarta Purana describes, Matar ityeva sabdena yamcha samba sate naraha samatri tulya satyena dharma sakshi satamapi. If a man addresses someone as mother, then dharma personified, Yamaraj, he takes note of that. So this phrase, mother or mataji, it's a phrase of the greatest respect. And if someone addresses a woman in that way, they should treat her in that way. Language is a relative thing. You can make up a word, and that word can be a word of respect in one place, and with someone else it can be a symbol of disrespect. And sometimes in our society today, the phrase Mataji is almost considered like a phrase of disrespect. It means a second-class citizen. If we're having a Sunday feast program, we'll say, so all the Prabhus sit over here in the Matajis, over here in the back. It means a second-class citizen. In colloquial American English, you might say nigger. It means some very bad person. But this is a misunderstanding of Vedic culture. In Vedic culture, Mataji is the highest thing. We have our Bindu email magazine, and we, for some time in our cover letter, we would write, Dear Maharajas, Matajis, and Prabhus, in that order. We said like that. And someone wrote to me and was a little annoyed. Why are you putting Matajis before Prabhus? This is not right. And I wrote him back and I said, well, personally, because I give more respect to my mother than I do to any Prabhu. And if I'm really going to see a woman as mother, I'm going to give her more respect. And this led us in a little bit of research, which came to some of these verses, and we found that this is Vedic culture. In Vedic culture, the woman is respected more than the man. And Krishna himself likes this. Why is it that we say, Sri Sri Radha Govinda Madhava? Why do we put Radharani's name before the name of Krishna? who's really first class and second class. It's described in Narada Pancharatra. Ado samucharit radham paschat krishnam chamadaham viparitam jadipatet brahmahatyam bedruvam. We should first say the name Radha, and then we say the name Krishna Madhav. Because Krishna likes that. Who's first class and who's second class? Krishna considers Radharani first class and himself second class. And for that reason, Krishna says we should say the name Radha before we say the name Krishna. So much so, Brahmahatyam Labedhuram, if you don't do that, if you say Krishna's name first, you get the result of killing a Brahmin. I don't know exactly what that means, but I would suggest one meaning can be that because we displease Krishna, Krishna gets more pleasure, seeing more respect given to Radharani. Why do we respect Radharani more? The next verse in Narada Pancharatra describes, Sri Krishna jagatam tato jagannatha charadika pitu sadguno mata vandya puja gariyasi. Because Krishna is the father of the world and Radharani is the mother, and the mother is 100 times more worshipable and higher in point of respect due than the father. This is Vedic culture. This is in the statement of Narada Pancharatra, the Mahabharata, Anusasana Parva, chapter 105, text 15 and 16 describes, Dasa chaiva pitin mata sarvam va pitivimapi goravena vivavati nasti matri samo guru matagari yashiyaccha tenai palmam yatejanaha. One's mother is equal to 10 fathers. Or one's mother is equal to the whole earth. There's no senior person equal to the mother. Indeed, she's above all others in terms of the reverence and respect due to her. It's for this reason that people offer so much respect to mother. So, Mahabharata again describes, Nasti vedat param shastram nasti matri samo guru nadharma paramola bhas tapo nanasanat param. There's no shastra superior to the Vedas, and there's no guru equal to one's mother. Now, again, we should understand this in context. It doesn't mean that if you're a Prabhupada disciple, that your mother is greater than Srila Prabhupada. No. This is a Lokik consideration, or a common consideration, a Gona, or secondary consideration. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking about in this purport about women. It's a secondary consideration, but it's a valuable consideration, and it can help us in our bhakti. But bhakti shouldn't be covered by it, and we shouldn't think that bhakti, that it's required, that I have to do this thing, that we have to, the women have to be this way, otherwise they can't get bhakti, or that this is the goal of our society, this is the goal of our life, for women to act in this way. If you behave like that, that's covering bhakti. And therefore, jnana karmadi anabhitam. We shouldn't cover bhakti with these things. In Thakur Bhakti Vinod, in Krishna Samhita, he says that he compares this to the Yajna Brahmins. Those Yajna Brahmins, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, they didn't understand Krishna. They couldn't appreciate Krishna. They were more attached to following all the rules and regulations. And who was it who defeated them and was greater than them? Their wives. Their wives were greater than them because they could understand the position of Krishna and Balaram. And they went to give foodstuffs to Krishna and Balaram. And then when their husbands found out about it, they spoke a famous verse. Digjanmanas chavid Digjanmanas chavid yatta digbhritam digbahu gitam dikkulam dikriya daksham vimukha ye fadukshaje. Dik means to hell. And they said, to hell with our celibacy. To hell with our threefold birth as Brahmins. To hell with our extensive learning.
To hell with our high birth. To hell with our expertise and sacrifice. To hell with it all. We're condemned because we were inimical to the Supreme Lord. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says because they placed too much stress on Vanashram. And it covered an avritam. It shouldn't cover. Avritam, it covered the glory of bhakti. So we have to become wise and understand and be able to balance both of these considerations. This Vanashram consideration, which Shastra speaks about, and Srila Prabhupada doesn't compromise. He speaks about. But we have to understand the relative position of this thing in context with Krishna Bhakti. We should understand the nature of our movement. In our movement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he rejected Vanashram. When Ramananda told him, he asked Ramananda Roy, "You please tell me what is the best thing?" And Ramananda Roy quoted this verse, Vanashram Acharyavata, Purushena Parapumana, you should do Vanashram. And Nanyat Tokta Shakaran, there's no other way to please Lord Vishnu. And Mahaprabhu said, Ehobhaya. That's external. Agi Kaha Ar. This is Ramananda Sambhava in Madhya Lila chapter 8 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the foundation of our movement. Why did he reject Vanashram? Srila Prabhupada gives a very extensive discussion about that. And there's a similar purport in Prabhupada in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says a very, the verse and purport say very interesting things. This fourth canto, chapter 29, text 46. Yada yashyana ghrinati bhagavan atmabhavitaha sajahati matim loke vedi cha parinishtitam. When a person is fully engaged in bhakti, he's favored by the Lord who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities, gives up vanashram, and gives up ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, when one is engaged in devotional service, he's no longer attracted to material activities. When a man is covered by different designations, he can't engage in devotional service. If we give all these different designations, if they cover bhakti, then we can't perform bhakti. Prabhupada says one has to become free from such designations, sarvapati vinir muktam, and become pure in order to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says that when one becomes free from that, that's the stage of becoming free from the contamination of the material world. At such a time, a devotee, Krishna Kuna is a very nice point, a devotee makes friends with another devotee. And this is a big subject matter we go into sometimes. And his engagement in material activities ceases completely. At that time, he attains the favor of the Lord, and he loses his faith in material civilization, which begins with Vanashram Dharma. So it begins with developing friends with the devotees. This is a paraphrase of two verses from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which are quoted very often, or at least the first part of it. Yashyaham anugrinami harishita dinamshanai. That you get the anugraha of the Lord, his favor, when harishita dinam, when he takes away all your wealth. But what does that mean? Harishita dinamshanai. Tato dinam pajanjisha sujana dukha dukitam. And that situation, swajana, all your janas, all your friends and relatives leave you, and in sudukitam, you suffer like anything. Is that the anugraha, the mercy of the Lord? Does that sound right, Prabhuji? If that's the mercy of the Lord, then all you have to do is just throw all your money away and become poor, and you'll become a great devotee. You'll get the mercy of the Lord. It doesn't make sense. The next verse describes what is the Lord's anugraha. I give my mercy in this way. When you lose all your friends because you have no money, sometimes even in our society, we love the big collectors. But then if they stop collecting in a big way, then we don't care for them very much. That means we're not acting as proper devotees. Because a devotee doesn't care if we have money or not. He's matparai, he's dedicated to Krishna. And that's a person you can make friends with when you lose everything. And when you make friends with the devotees in that way, that's the beginning of bhakti. And Prabhupada says here in his purport in the fourth canto, at that time, when you make friends with the devotees based on hearing and chanting about Krishna, then you give up Vanashram Dharma. This is described in the... that when Prabhupada was saying that we have to make friends with devotees, so Parashrana Katanam Pavanam Bhagavad Yusa, that friendship is based on hearing and chanting. And when we begin that hearing and chanting, that goes beyond Vanashram. That goes beyond considerations about chaste women, about this thing and that thing, when we're hearing and chanting. And persons may not be able to perfectly follow everything. They may still be homosexual, or this or that, but still they can chant Hare Krishna. We have no problem. And they can go on. It's described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that Sthani Sita Shuddhi Gatam Dhanadharma Nobir. When you begin to hear Krishna Katha, it doesn't matter where you're at. Stay where you're at. Stay in your position. You don't have to change your social position. But just go on hearing and chanting. And everything will be taken care of. An example in that regard is Raghunath Das Goswami. He wanted to run away from home and join the Hare Krishna movement. And Mahaprabhu told him, don't be a crazy fellow. Stay with your wife. Stay with your family. And continue doing these. And Krishna will make an arrangement. If there's some problem, Krishna will make an arrangement. This is our solution. We don't have to make external solutions. Sometimes over the years, I've had at least two devotees, senior devotees, come to me in confidence and tell me, Madhavan, I'm not sure what I should do. Thinking maybe I should get married, or maybe I should take sannyas. I don't mean to offend anyone, but both times I thought, this person's nonsense. You should have no choice. We have no choice in bhakti. We surrender. The first thing, the primary qualification, primary symptom of a Vaishnava is that he surrendered. So it's not that I think I'll do this. Or maybe I'll do this other thing. Which would I like to do? We have no choice. We accept our position in Vanashram, what every Krishna and Guru have given us. And we act according to that. If Guru and Krishna want us to be a sannyasi, you must. If Guru and Krishna want you to be a householder, then you do that thing. And that's more than a karma sannyasi. Uh-huh. So we should understand the position of these things in our movement. We should understand the nature and role of women in our society. There's an interesting pastime in this regard in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, in Madhulita chapter 18. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he called to the devotees and he told Chandrasekhar Acharya, he said, I want to do a drama in your house. And he called for Buddhimanta Khan, and Buddhimanta Khan, he started getting some props and costumes, like we have for Disu dance or something. Those are required for a nice drama. And then different devotees took different roles. They were going to act out different roles in the drama. Mahaprabhu said, I'll act as Mahalakshmi. And then Mahaprabhu, he told the devotees at that time, Prakriti, Prakriti Sarupa Nitya Hoide Nama Deki Kete Gatya Kriya Mara Mara Hare Krishna Hare And only people who are qualified and self-controlled, they can come and watch. Senses will be allowed to remain in the house. And when the devotees heard that, they were all quiet. And they hung their heads. These are the associates of Mahaprabhu. If we said there's only devotees who are completely in control of his senses can come to the program, who will come? Huh? I'm not going to come. Huh? Advaita Acharya, he drew a line in the ground. He said, I'm not going. Srivastava said, I'm also not going, I'm not qualified. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told them, he said, if you don't come, then who's going to see? He said, anyway, don't worry. I'll make all of you qualified. Now, you won't become bewildered by this thing. So then the drama began, and Haridas Thakur, he came out as the chokidar, and he began the drama. It'd be very good for Bhagavatam class also. He came out with a stick, and he said, listen carefully. Everyone watch this drama. And anyone who falls asleep, I have my stick. This is Vedic drama. So then different devotees came out. And Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu came out as the Lord's internal potency. And Satyamata and Vishnu Priya were there. Who is this? Huh? They were asking. They couldn't recognize. And Mahaprabhu, he took on the roles of Mahalakshmi, as Radharani, as Durga, Chandi, Rukmini, Ganga Devi, Mahamaya, Revati, so many different consorts of the Lord. And Lord Nityananda, seeing all this, he fainted. And then Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu, he took the deity of Gopinath on his lap. And he sat down on the throne. And then he told all the devotees present there, offer prayers to me. And then all the devotees began praying in different ways, according to said in another place in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Jai Rupa Chinti Dasi, Sei Rupa Hoi. According to how they conceived the Lord, how they considered him, they offered prayers. Some people, they offered prayers to Lakshmi, some offered prayers to Durga, some recited some Sri Shukta, some Chandika Stotra, and different prayers according to how they saw Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu at that time. And then at that time, Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu did a very amazing thing. Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu, in that mood, he had the same feelings of love that a mother has for a child. And then he went out with lifted up his cloth, and he began to breastfeed all the different devotees who were there. This is Gaura Leela, and this is the beginning of Mahaprabhu's preaching. In other words, preaching in Mahaprabhu's mind means the behavior of a mother. It means that this motherly shakti is predominant. This is prominent in Gaura. We have to respect this thing. Our culture is a long, long ways away from India. It's a very different culture here. And we have a very hard time understanding these descriptions of the importance of chaste wives and how ladies should be protected and not allowed outside. We have a different culture. And we should understand, though, that this is a very high-class culture. We can respect it. But we should understand the best thing, the topmost thing, is to get Krishna Bhakti. And if this culture helps us in that, very good, then we accept it. But it shouldn't cover Bhakti. We shouldn't think that it's the goal. We shouldn't think that we have to do this, otherwise we can't get Krishna Bhakti. Because Bhakti is everything, and Bhakti is independent. Bhakti is only dependent upon the chanting of Krishna's name. That's our primary purpose in our society. Uttama Adama Kichina Bhachiva Jachi Adilika Kola. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't consider who's Uttam, who's Adam, who's high class or low class. And this means the considerations of Vanashram Dharma. He didn't consider who's a chaste wife and who's been married 10 times. We have men and women in our society like that. But this is us. We're all bozos on this bus. And we have to learn to live with each other. And put bhakti in the forefront, but at the same time,
Don't compromise. This is a very high-class culture, and we can respect it and try to go in that direction. So stop there. Grandarashmad Bhagavatam ki, Shiva Prabhupada ki, Go Premanandi. I want to apologize again. We took rest very late last night, finishing my yesterday's round, and I haven't started chanting. And maybe you have some questions. I don't know. This is such a good topic. Tonight we'll have another program. You know, devotees, I promise tonight, anybody has questions, we can take them then. But I'd really rather not this morning. Thank you very much. Ramchakopa Guru Vishnu, Sindhu Vihiru Chan, Pitana, Father, Vishnu.